Blog Talk Radio.
Thank you.
If you say that you're for us, if you teach the Negroes, they don't even know their own thing. Why? Because he took it away from them. Please, please. 20 million black people don't even know their own language. Why? Because he took it away from them. 20 million black people who don't even know the history of their ancestors. Why? Because he took it away from them. And then he's trying to tell them how thoroughly and completely they can rob. He says you're teaching hate. They were coming out of college. They're coming out of the leading university. You're trying to go in a good direction, but you don't know which direction to go in. And if somebody tries to take you right to the root of your problem, they say that that man's a hater. If I ask why should the senators in Washington, and then again, if we tell you that Negroes are being hung on the street or being shot down illegally, unjustly, and those Negroes should do something to protect themselves, you say you're advocating violence. The white man is tricking you. He's trapping you. He doesn't call it violence when he lands troops in South Vietnam. Please, please, please. He doesn't call it violence when he lands troops in Berlin. When the Japanese attacked Pearl Harbor, he didn't say get nonviolent. He said, praise the Lord, but pass the ammunition. But when someone attacks you, when someone comes at you with a club, when someone comes at you with a rope, when someone comes at you with a gun, despite the fact that you've done nothing, he tells you, suffer peacefully. Pray for those who use you despitefully. Be long-suffering. And how long can you suffer after suffering for 400 years? Well, I just want to play up that little point right there. Because he says that we play on your emotions. And when you turn on your television tonight, or your radio, or read the newspaper, they're going to tell you in that paper that I was playing on your emotions. Imagine you, a second-class citizen, that's not getting emotional, it's getting intelligent. And as far as your mayor is concerned, I see shit there, mayor. A man named Jordan, who has been slandering the Muslims, a professional liar, a professional liar. Who has mastered the art of using past truth. Put it in the paper that they broke into our religious place of worship and got records that they can use to prove that most of us have criminal records. You can't be a Negro in America and not have a criminal record. Martin Luther King has been to jail. Please. James Palmer has been to jail. Why, you can't name a black man in this country who is sick and tired of the hell that he's catching who hasn't been to jail. Charged him with being seditious. They put Moses in jail. They put Daniel in jail. Why, you haven't got a man of God in the Bible that wasn't put to jail when they started speaking out against exploitation and oppression. They charged Jesus with sedition. Didn't they do that? They said he was against Caesar. They said he was discriminating because he told his disciples, go not the way of the Gentiles, but rather go to the lost sheep. He discriminated. Don't go near the Gentiles. Go to the lost sheep. Go to the oppressed. Go to the downtrodden. Go to the exploited. Go to the people who don't know who they are, who are lost from the knowledge of themselves, and who are strangers in a land that is not theirs. Go to those people. Go to the slaves. Go to the second class citizens. Go to the ones who are suffering the threat of Caesar's brutality. And if Jesus were here in America today, he wouldn't be going to the white man. The white man is the oppressor. He would be going to the oppressed. He would be going to the humble. He would be going to the lowly. He would be going to the rejected and the despised. He would be going to the so-called American Negro. There's no disgrace. To remain a criminal is a disgrace. I formerly was a criminal. I formerly was in prison. I'm not ashamed of that. You never can use that over my head. And that he's using the wrong stick. I don't feel that stick. I went to prison because I believed in men like Sam Jordan. I went to prison because I trusted men like Sam Jordan. I went to prison following the philosophy of men like Sam Jordan. But since I've been following the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, I have been reformed, and that's more, please. That's more than Sam Jordan and Chief Parker and all these other white politicians have been able to do with the inmates in the prison of this state. They should give Mr. Muhammad credit. They should give Mr. Muhammad credit for reforming and rehabilitating men whom they have failed to reform and rehabilitate. Before the press report that Mr. Muhammad had once been found guilty of contributing to the delinquency of a minor, he failed to explain purposely that in 1934, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad refused to send his children to the white schools in Detroit, Michigan that were teaching you about little black sand boys. That's the minor that he contributed to the delinquency of. You see, this vicious, fork-tongued white man has been able to take lies and make you turn against those who want to help you and make others turn against you. This is the contributing to the delinquency of a minor that this lawyer, or man who calls himself mayor, talking about. In the same article, he said that the Muslims are the same people who rioted in the United Nations. Someone should pull his coat and let him know that at the present moment, there are $6 million worth of suits, rubble, against two of New York's leading newspapers for making the mistake of charging the Muslims as being involved in those United Nations riots. We were not involved. And if this fork-tongued man who calls himself Jared Mayer had taken the time to find that out, he wouldn't be walking into the trap that he's letting his ignorance lead him into. The Washington Post that came out the Sunday after that incident took place, the Washington Post pointed out on the front page that the Muslims had nothing to do with the UN riots. And they quoted, in saying so, the person who was at that time the commissioner of police in New York City. See, it's lies that the white man had spread about the Muslims to try and make you afraid of the Muslims, but to try and make you think that the Muslims were a criminal element, an uncouth element, and things that you would not like to be associated with. Also, they say that, I'm just clearing these things up, and then we're going to get into what happened. They also say that the Honorable Elijah Muhammad was a draft dodger. No, he wasn't. He just refused to go to the army, because he was a man of peace. He was a minister of a religion of peace. He was teaching peace. So he outright refused to go to the army. That's not draft dodging. That's intelligence. Here before the grand jury.
And greetings, family. Welcome to a special edition of New Day, Resurrection and Liberation. My name is Empress Chi, also known as Dr. Belay. And, of course, we played several excerpts from Elhaj Malik El-Shabazz, Malcolm X. Those were sessions that were pretty much recorded in 1962. Different topics, different areas of focus and discussion, but nevertheless, pretty much the same kinds of things that we're talking about today. So that's kind of what we want to focus on. You know, one of the questions that we're raising tonight is, you know, what our brother, our, as is known, shining black prince, what he gave to us, what he, his vision, what he showed us, what he accomplished, his legacy. All of those things that many have talked about over the years, yet where is the representation for it today in the kind of manner that he represented? Where are we seeing it today? We've got to really ask ourselves that question. And so that's one of the things we want to kind of give some thought to tonight in terms of really examining how are we going to move forward? How are we going to proceed? And also, why we have not? How has that happened that in the 21st century, we're not only still talking about some of the same things that Brother Malcolm talked about and see some of the same things that Brother Malcolm was talking about and seeing, but why are we not seeing any kind of real pushback, repercussions or whatever in this day and age? We have to really have a better comprehension as to what has happened and why. And so with MWM, we get ready to bring some of that to you. I can tell you firsthand, I had no clue as to what some of our ancestors went through, both past, like, you know, the past 400 years and even the more recent years when it came to fighting for our liberation, particularly because we, many of us are very clear about the enemy that we pretty much know as being the primary enemy. But what we oftentimes do not, if not talk about or focus on, is the enemy within, and not just within ourselves, because we got some enemies within ourselves too, by the way, and for some very obvious reasons, but also the enemies that are within our communities, within our families, within our organizations, and so forth. Why are we not addressing some of this, at least more realistically and more effectively? Well, it's time that we start coming up with some answers, some conclusions, and hopefully some solutions, or at least somewhat, some potential possibilities. So these are some of the things you're going to hear us talk more about here on New Day, and not only talk more about it, but bring about some of the information, some of the suggestions, some of the proposals, and so forth, that enables us to get some of the stuff done that we really need to get done in this day and age. So today is $2 Tuesday. And of course, every Tuesday is $2 Tuesday for us, where we ask folks to contribute $2 or more. But Femi, I'm just going to say this. Really, even though it wasn't intended to be a test, for me, it was kind of like a test to just see who would donate $2 to the obvious work that we do here at New Day and what MWM has been doing for quite a while now. The various kinds of sessions, forums, conferences, rallies, all those kinds of things. We just wanted to kind of see, or at least me, because when Sister Tawanda started the campaign, she started it, you know, full-heartedly because, you know, she wanted to make sure that something could happen weekly to provide some minimum support. And so for me, I really wanted to see who would do it. Because in observing what has been going on for a while, I realize that when you are a black woman, when you're not co-signed by the church or the corporations or some other kind of entity that is not talking about or trying to deal with self-determination, I realize that's like an uphill battle. But why? Why is that a battle? Well, I tell you, it took a lot for me to realize how real that was. And so very soon now we're going to bring the receipts, as they say, and share what we now know to be the truth about why black women in the U.S. have been not only, shall we say, kicked to the curb, but how those who are really sister soldiers are really discarded, disrespected, and minimized. This is why if you ask yourself today, what sister do you know of that is representing our sisters and our people when it comes to justice and liberation? Now, of course, those who are in the movement will be able to say a few that they're familiar with. But if you ask the average person, who do they think or who do they even admire that they feel is doing some serious work for us? What do you think is going to come up? Well, again, these are some of the questions that we're going to be asking in the very near future, because next month is Women's History Month. And so for Women's History Month, we're going to raise some real serious questions about not only women's history, black women's history, contributions, and so forth and so on. We want to start getting down to the real nitty-gritty. Why don't we have black women on a national level that's doing some serious work, again, in a self-determination mode, functioning based on the grants, the corporate sponsoring, the political machinery, but because, as our women have demonstrated years ago, because of the spirit, because of the heart of it, because of the need for it. And so we're going to ask the questions, where they at now? Because most of what you see is being financed by other people. And I'm not saying there's anything wrong with that. I mean, I'm not saying you shouldn't get money from other people. I'm not saying that at all. But what I am saying is that shouldn't be your main thing. Right. And we're going to continue to stress that point, and not only stress the point, but to demonstrate what it is we need to be doing, why and how. At any rate, family, again, welcome to this new segment or a special segment of New Day. I'm going to take a few minutes to see if I can bring in Chairman Fred Hampton Jr. He was to join us tonight. However, he's stuck at the airport. It's snowing. And where is he at? Utah, someplace. It's literally snowing, and the planes have been pretty much grounded. And so when I spoke with him last, he was kind of stranded, or not really stranded, but, you know, trying to make some moves to, you know, to get out of wherever he was at. So I'm going to check in with him now to see if we can bring him in. Again, he might have been able to catch a flight. I'm not sure, but we will see in a few minutes. So bear with me. Let's see. None. Okay. Yeah, hopefully we can catch up with him, because we wanted to get his views on one of the topics or focuses that we wanted for tonight, and that is, of course, COINTELPRO. Because when we talk about Brother Malcolm, and again, tonight's program had three M's in it, looking at Brother Mecca Evers, Dr. Martin Luther King, Malcolm X, and Mumia. The three, of course, prior to Mumia, was set up by the government harassed by the white supremacists, et cetera, et cetera. So now we have Mumia. And so now we want to make sure that we not only fight for him, but bring him home now. The others, we were not able to save. We can save Mumia Abu-Jamal. So let's see if we can catch up with Chairman Fred. And hopefully we'll be able to bring him in to remind us about the dangers. Hey, Chairman.
Yes, yes.
All right, we got you. You're still at the
airport. You got to give me about 5 minutes. I'm on the other line with this airline, like literally right now. You got to give me a few minutes. I'm like, they trying to jack me for this ticket.
Okay,
to
go
get back
ahead.
Up out of
I'll
here.
Be right here. Yeah, yeah, yeah. We'll be right here.
Okay.
Just click back over
right.
when you get a chance.
All right.
Family. So as we say, and as you can tell, Chairman Fred is, in fact, still at the airport trying to get a flight out of there. You know, there's a snowstorm where he is. But while we're waiting for him to come back, again, we just want to remind you that when we talk about COINTELPRO, and we must, because when it comes to Evers, and if not COINTELPRO, certainly the government, certainly the system of white supremacy was involved. Also, of course, with Brother Malcolm, needless to say, and you do know that there is legislation and other things in our midst to help bring the information from the FBI files. We're trying to make certain that that information is now more transparent, that other files that they have not released is released. And so we're going to be getting an update on some of the legislation that has recently been entered. I believe it was Bobby Rush, who is now retired. And so we are waiting just a little bit for the incumbent that is there now to see what their position is and what they're doing. And for those that do not know, it is Jesse Jackson's son who is now in the seat for Congress that Bobby Rush had. So, again, he just got in. We're going to give him a little time, and then hopefully we'll be able to get some answers in terms of where he stands with that legislation. As we proceed with the We Charge Genocide 21 project, we're literally getting ready for the July session, and by then we will be able to provide a report because we are going to be surveying a lot of the black elected officials on a national level. So on the city level, on the state level, and on the federal level, we will be issuing information about who we are, what we're doing with the We Charge Genocide 21 project, but also asking them their position on reparations, on reparatory justice. We want to see it in writing. We don't just want to hear the lip service. We want to see whatever their position is, pro or con, in terms of African reparations in this country. We want that on record. And so that will be a part of the July session for the Queen Mother Moore weekend, and it's also a national black political and social justice forum. Now, with that said, this is going to be very new, or very different, shall I say, not really new, but different, because what we began to realize in recent times is there's an old guard, for lack of a better word, and this old guard functions very interestingly, and I'm talking about in our communities. And what we've realized is unless you go through some of the old guard, it becomes very complicated, very, very complicated. And interestingly enough, when we look at, you know, progress, here we are in 2023, but yet we have no schools for the most part in our community. I mean, one or two here and there, but for the most part, no independent schools, no independent arts and culture institutions. And when I say independent, I mean not depending on grants or corporate sponsoring or those types of things. I'm not saying, again, don't get that, but they are dependent on that. That's what we're saying. So, again, how do we be here now in the 21st century and we can't really cite much of that? We have a few businesses, but many of our black businesses are not community-oriented. They're not really trying to service the community, at least not in the context of development. they service the community in the context of making some money, but not in terms of really doing things in the community to help our people. And so we have to look at these things very carefully and ask the question, why? Why do we not have these things in our communities today? So listen, family, I'm going to ask you, what are your thoughts as to, one, here we are today, decades later from the time that our shining black prince was assassinated, was murdered. Here we are today on this day. Why have we not progressed in the way that Brother Malcolm taught and stood for? I'm not saying we haven't progressed, because in some cases, I guess, you know, we could say we have in some areas of things, perhaps. But in the way that Brother Malcolm was teaching and striving, where's that at? So if you have a comment on that, I would love to hear it. You can press one now. And certainly when it comes to the issues of self-determination and self-defense, again, we want to ask, where's that at? Why don't we have that going on today? And of course, there has been a few attempts, obviously. For the most part, we haven't seen it to really manifest beyond a certain point. And particularly given the fact that we did have some of that at some point, but what we have seen in later years, it has pretty much dissipated. So while we're waiting for Chairman Freed to come back, because again, he's on the other line trying to, you know, resolve his catching a plane. He's really stuck at the airport and trying to get another plane ticket to get out, or trying to get another plane, period, to get out. Not plane ticket, but a plane to get out. So while we're waiting for him, we're going to go back to Brother Malcolm for a few. And again, the question is, where do we go from here? Brother Malcolm showed us so much, taught us so much. Where do we go from here? We're going to take a quick play of just a little bit more of Brother Malcolm, then we're going to come back to our lines with family. We got to do better. We can't be in 2020, almost 24, and this is what we have. So we're going to take a few more moments here, a few more thoughts from Brother Malcolm, and then we're going to go to the lines.
Once the police have convinced the white public that the so-called Negro community is a criminal element. They can go in and question, brutalize, murder unarmed, innocent Negroes, and the white public is gullible enough to back them up. This makes the Negro community a police state. This makes the Negro neighborhood a police state. It's the most heavily patrolled. It has more police in it than any other neighborhood, yet it has more crime in it than any other neighborhood. How can you have more cops and more crime? Why? It shows you that the cops must be in cahoots with the criminals.
That we now have today. And we cannot continue to use these excuses that often people are using. And again, to our sisters and our brothers, here we have the Million Woman March and now it's Universal Movements that can convey information to our women throughout the diaspora who are really going to be victims because they don't know. They're not getting the kinds of information oftentimes that we get. For example, there are major lawsuits right now that are being prepared against the hair relaxer companies, the hair straightening companies. Major lawsuits are getting ready to be filed. And in fact, we're involved in some hearings very soon here in Philadelphia. And we'll be going to other cities to do some of the hearings of women, our women, who have been diagnosed with various types of cancer, fibroid tumors, and other kinds of things that have now been linked to the usage of hair straighteners, relaxers. Now, one of my brothers said to me a few days ago, you know, people be saying about you that you're angry. Well, you're damn right I'm angry. That's just so ridiculous. So I'm not supposed to speak out on that, or I'm not supposed to exemplify angry? That's such a bad thing? When, in fact, you're able to utilize that in a positive, productive way. And so we do by doing the work that's necessary. So here's the point. We have women now who are suffering, have suffered, with various form endometriitis and other forms of cancer, Because think about it. Putting this stuff on your head, and I got to be honest, I was one of those children. Now, I haven't been diagnosed with anything, but many have. And I'm saying because of the social climate for many women, there was this forcing in one context and trusting in another. Because literally, you know, for women who were trying to get jobs, you couldn't go to work. You couldn't get a job when you had, you know, during one period of time, if you had a bush, an afro, you could not get no work. Now, of course, that changed for a couple of years or whatever when people start wearing the bush, the afro. But 50s and early 60s, that wasn't happening. You either got your hair straightened with a straightening comb and then later with the hair straightener, or you wore a wig. This is just the facts. And, of course, there were some women that resisted that, needless to say, but many did not. We did not have the kind of information or the knowledge of certain things. Now we're paying the price as women. And oftentimes the daughters were also subjected to that, too. So this is a critical issue, but here's the point. Our sisters in the diaspora many of them don't have that information. And so they are encouraged to straighten their hair with these chemicals putting on their head, on their scalps, and also bleaching their skin. Now, apparatus is going to help them to learn or to know something different. And again, the Million Woman March stepped up, and we've been penalized ever since. And so now we're clear about how this thing works, why it works. So now we're moving to the next level and knowing how to defend ourselves a lot better from both the enemy that we know as well as the enemy that is right in our midst. So this basic common everyday enemy that we know as the off-white man or the Caucasian, but it's also the Negropeans now. And this is too something that Brother Malcolm often talked about. Okay. So again, we are going to we're going to try Chairman Fred again to see if he's available. And hold on one moment. Okay. And we're going to talk more about some of the positions that Brother Malcolm gave to us. Some of the, not only positions, some of the teachings, but also some of the accomplishments and some of the legacy that we are obligated to continue. Okay, Jennifer must be still on the other line with the, he's still on the other line because he would pick up if he wasn't. Okay, family, so hold on one moment. Let me X this out. Okay, there we go. All right, we're going to hopefully get him back shortly. Again, he's trying to get a plane from whatever location, I forget the exact location that he's in, but wherever it is, it's snowing. The other thing we wanted to kind of mention in terms of Brother Malcolm, in terms of accomplishments, the We Charge Genocide 21, of course, focused a lot on the work of, you know, Paul Robeson. And it's interesting because we didn't hear many people talk about Paul Robeson until, you know, more recently. And, you know, for the past 5 years, we were literally doing our meetings before COVID at the Paul Robeson House because we wanted to make certain that we were able to tap into not only the legacy, but the work, the energy, the synergy. And so, you know, we did a lot of research. But again, make sure that we connect directly with those entities. And so we were holding our initial meetings at the Paul Robeson House. And again, did so up until COVID and then up until they had a new director, which they now have. but the former director was very, very supportive of our work, and we kind of miss her now. But at any rate, let me see. I might have just gotten a text from Chairman Freer. Let me just check that. Yep, I sure did. Okay. All right. Okay, he's saying that the airlines keep dropping. Okay. All right, he's going to call in as soon as he finishes with the airlines. After he just texted me. So, so again, you know, so we studied the work of Paul Robeson and William Patterson, and continue to do so ongoingly. Their documents and the various things, and so in talking about Brother Malcolm, one of the things that the We Transgender Side 21 project is committed to is continuing his work. And so we've been reviewing some of the things that he actually did, his speech, of course, or a presentation to the African Union, and these types of things. So we've developed some next step initiatives based on some of the work that Brother Malcolm did when it came to the issue of human rights. And so these are some of the things that we also want to talk about, not only tonight, but of course with the upcoming Queen Mother Moore weekend that's going to take place here in Philly, July 27th through the 30th. And it's really going to be interesting because our focus is not going to be so much on people who are already in the area of doing this work, but also folk who are just getting kind of acclimated to reparatory justice, reparations, and so forth. We want to start making certain that the grassroots, and this is, of course, what Brother Malcolm taught us, the grassroots, we're going to make sure that the people are educated, given information about reparations, about human rights violations. And so once the weather breaks, we'll be hitting it even more so in our communities, not just online, not just Zoom, not just the virtual, but in our communities, we will literally be giving out information, pamphlets, flyers. What is this? Why is that? So that the masses of our people have a better capability of not only knowing and understanding what we're talking about, but why. We're committed to that. Absolutely. And so with that said, family, we're going to play another segment or let me see, I'm trying to cue something up here, another something else from Brother Malcolm. And then we're going to hopefully catch up again with Chairman Fred. Again, he's stuck at the airport. So as soon as he's finished trying to get another flight out, because where he's at, it's a snowstorm, and he's kind of stuck in the airport. So as soon as he is ready, we will bring him in. And again, we're talking about COINTELPRO from the past, but also the present. Recently, by the way, MWM was infiltrated again. And so we need to be real clear that even though COINTELPRO as we know it is no longer in existence as we have known it, there are some other operations that is clear. And we're going to start breaking down what to look for in terms of agents and other kinds of counterproductive usurpers, insurgents coming into your group, your organization, and your community. This, too, is what Brother Malcolm was bringing to our attention. And so, hold on 1 minute. I'm trying to cue this other piece back up. Okay, here we go. Okay, we're going to go back to another segment of Brother Malcolm, again, while we're waiting for Chairman Freer to get back with us. And then we're going to come back to you, family, with your comments, your thoughts. Given what Brother Malcolm has already shown and shared with us, where do we go from here? And how? Why have we not advanced to the degree that we really should have been by now, given all that he and others have already given us? We're going to come back to you all in a moment for your questions, comments, and thoughts. Today we salute El Hajj Malik al-Shabazz, our shining black prince. Representation now for our community. not just one particular segment of our people, but in general, where is it at and why? So these are some of the questions and some of the things that we really want to begin to get more insight into. And again, before we go to the Lyons family, and if you have a comment, a thought about any of what we've been talking about in terms of Brother Malcolm, about where do we go from here, please press 1. And we want to hear what your thoughts are. What is it that we really need to do? Realistically, what is it that we can do, given the fact that Brother Malcolm and others gave us, you know, kind of some guidelines, certainly some teaching, certainly some information. But where do we go from here? Now, you know, of course, we're dealing with taking information to the United Nations. We've gotten all kinds of responses from that. And interestingly enough, while we've been doing it for 5 years, we're kind of hearing some of our platform being, shall we say, applied to other kinds of things, which is fine because we have 21 areas that we're dealing with. We started off with 21 areas, and we got that still. And actually, it's 21 plus. But we made it very clear that the crimes against humanity, as Brother Malcolm taught us, to be addressed. And those crimes against humanity, meaning the human rights violations of our people, is more than just one thing, two things, three things, four things, five things. It's a variety of things. And these things have to be dealt with accordingly. So while we embrace, again, the work of Paul Robeson, William Patterson, while we embrace the work of course, Queen Mother Moore, Dr. Robert Brock, Dr. Yusuf Klee, Dr. Amari Obadeli, and others. Certainly, as we embrace all of their works and to bring them forward, you see, this is our goal and objective with the Recharge Genocide 21 Project. This is how and why we're bringing forward the movement for Black self-determination, justice, and human rights. And let's be real clear, this is not for or about anyone else. Unlike others, we make it very clear, our position is to focus on the human rights violations of our people. Now, do we want allies? Of course. Of course. We've been allies to others. People should be allies to us as well. But our mission is not about other folks' agendas or other people, the position demands or whatever. We support others, needless to say, but that's not our role or primary focus. Our primary focus is our ancestors, the 400 plus years, et cetera, et cetera. That's our focus, our primary focus, our main focus, and that's what we're looking to do. So you'll be hearing more as we proceed in regards to the We Charge Genocide 21, because we're getting ready to do some virtual classes to be able to provide information to anyone that, you know, would like to learn more or be more in tune to what it is that we're talking about and others are talking about when it comes to reparations, because we don't want people to, you know, to be exploitive. And yeah, I said it. We want to make sure on our part that people are respectful and aware of our ancestors and not just, you know, going to do things because there's some money or something else that is being fought for or that will be made available. Again, you know, we can't tell anybody what to do or how to do or how to think, but at least we can make it clear that that's not our position. We're not trying to utilize a situation, you know, in such a way that it doesn't represent a fuller picture. And so when we talk about reparations with our We Trust Inside 21 campaign. Certainly, it is not just about the check or the money. We want land. And this is, again, Dr. Mario Budelli and others, Queen Mother Moore. This is also a part of those teachings. So, family, again, we want to make sure that, you know, we give you a very holistic approach to what it is that we're doing and working for. And for those who are naysayers, those who, for whatever reason, find no need to support, it's okay. We understand what's going on now and welcome it, because when we rise above it, even better. So, again, if you have a comment or a thought, we welcome you to do so now. You can press 1, and we certainly would love to hear your thought about Brother Malcolm X, about human rights, black human rights, that is, and other things that are relevant to this conversation. I want to remind you that on, on Saturday, which I believe is the 25th, we'll be doing a special tribute to, hold on one minute, I was trying to pull up another clip for you. We will be doing a tribute to Dr. Khalid Muhammad. His transition day is also this month. And unlike most, we do not observe February 17th. We know that there are some that do, but that's not what we do. And the reason is because of the conflicting kinds of reports that we were able to get, in 2003, I believe it was, when we did an inquest here in Philadelphia looking into his death. And some of that information gave us brought us to the conclusion that we could not accept just what was being initially told, and there's, you know, certain other areas of things that have still yet been really kind of, you know, given a thorough, or shall we say, a more realistic kind of viewpoint, for lack of a better word. So at any rate, we observe, me, myself, and a few others, we observe February 24th, and we do so based on the fact that that is the day that the coffin actually went into the ground. Now, do we know if he was in there? No, we do not. Maybe somebody does, but we don't. But at least we know that that day a ceremony did take place. We saw it with our own eyes. And, you know, we go from there. Okay, so before we close out, I want to give you some information about Mumi Abu-Jamal, because that was a part of our discussion for tonight as well. And we're going to recap it on Saturday for our regular program, because we did receive word today that a date has been given for the next court appearance for Mumi. And we have to confirm that. That has not been confirmed as of yet, but a date has been given. And so by Saturday's broadcast, we should be able to confirm that for you. Hold on one moment. There we go. We're going to play a clip from Brother Malcolm on dealing with human rights. And when we come back, we're going to give you some information again on what we're getting ready to do to address the issue of bringing Mumia home from the grassroots level. And that is a petition that's going to be circulated here in Philadelphia for the next couple of weeks, or at least up until the point that we know that the next court date is being set. We're going to do that in our communities, because many of our people still really don't know. And it's not that the efforts have not been taking place, but yet we just want to, you know, make sure that we do our part. And so we'll be putting information in various locations, the libraries and so forth, with the judge's name, telephone number, and email address, along with city council people, because they need to also be reached out to and encouraged to look at the latest evidence. The information is going to also go to the congressperson, the black congressperson in particular, Dwight Evans, again, encouraging him to look at the new evidence that has been presented, particularly the new evidence that has been presented by Judge Wendell, and because Wendell Griffin, because he made it very clear that the judge here in Philadelphia has really an obligation to follow the law. We know what that can mean in real time, but nevertheless, there is a law on the books that makes it very clear that when information or evidence is not submitted at the time of the trial, then once it is discovered, particularly if it's known that it had been withheld, then that warrants for a release. And if not a release, at least a new trial. So that's what needs to happen at this point, family. So again, we're going to give you more information about that on Saturday. But for now, again, we're going to the issue of human rights as Brother Malcolm X conveyed it to us.
Struggles in America has been confined to what has been protected to the public as a civil rights struggle. And in that context, it has remained a domestic problem. It has remained within the jurisdiction of the United States. And it has, and as such, it has been impossible for the Afro-Americans or American Negroes to try and enlist the support of other dark-skinned people who are being oppressed the world over in that struggle. And the difference now in the direction that the struggle is taking, from the direction that the struggle has been going in the past, there are many of our people who are thinking more deeply and more broadly and are beginning to see the importance of lifting it out of the national context or out of the domestic context or beyond the jurisdiction of the United States government. And the only way this can be done is by internationalizing the problem and putting it at a level where it can be taken into the United Nations, and then all of the other independent nations on this earth can involve themselves in our struggle and support us. And the only way by this, of which this can be done, instead of it being called civil rights in the future, we're going to have to label it a human rights struggle or the struggle for human rights. And as such, we can then take it into the United Nations through the avenues that have been set up by the United Nations Commission on Human Rights. We can take our problem before the United Nations in the same manner that the problem of South Africa, Angola, Mozambique, Hungary, the Arab refugee problem, it becomes a world problem. And as a world problem, then the Afro-American or the so-called Negroes equal results, because it's not left up to the one who's responsible for it anymore, but it's put at a level where the whole can see that our plight is wrong. It stood in our path in the past. It also makes a difference in the leadership. Those who have been posing as leaders of our people in America in the past, they can pose on this local stage where Uncle Sam is the master of the show and can prop them up and make them look good or make them look better than they actually are by giving them token gains and building them up an image. But when they step onto the international stage or the world stage, then Uncle Sam can't prop them up anymore. And their ability or lack of ability becomes exposed. And if they can lead us forward, they remain leaders. But if they can't, then they have to step aside, and more qualified and bona fide leaders step up from the masses of our people, and then we get more, we get faster progress, we get more results.
The Afro-American or American Negro intellectual permitted himself to be used in a way that wasn't really beneficial to the overall Afro-American struggle. But I think today that these intellectuals have begun to undertake a new appraisal of the problem, looking at it as it actually is, and are beginning to see it more in the international context and the relation that it has with the African struggle. And the African intellectual is beginning to look at the problem in the African context and see that what might be good in one country in order for it to be used in another country, has to be rearranged. You take African socialism. Many of the African intellectuals that have analyzed the approach of socialism are beginning to see where the African has to use a form of socialism that fits into the African context, whereas the form that is used in a European country might be good for that particular European country. It doesn't fit as well into the African context. So I think the African intellectual is making that contribution, and he's making it well.
People think Lenin.
All right. So that's relatively clear, family. We now, and this was said how many years ago? Like 1964?
Wow.
Listen, we are moving too slowly, unnecessarily. And so the time has come where we have to call it the way it really is. People have gotten in our way. We've let it, and we can no longer allow it to happen. So for those who are really serious, they're going to start moving things in such a way that we are not going to allow any further unnecessary stagnation. With that said, and we'll be repeating this and also sending it out. We'll be sending this information out very soon with the names of the council people here in Philadelphia, along with the judge's name, along with the congressperson's name, and also some other people that we suggest you reach out to and contact. There is a Black Legislative Caucus here in Philadelphia where all of the Black elected officials, for the most part, are members of. They need to be contacted, at least in terms of them encouraging the judge to do the right thing, but they themselves haven't that looked at the information, the new evidence. Now, one person, or some might argue that it's not in their jurisdiction. Whenever you're dealing with human rights, whenever you're dealing with what is right, period, then it's not a question of jurisdiction. It's a question of ethics and morality. And that's what we're talking about now. To do the moral thing. This is not just about the legalities of something. This is about the morality of something. And this is the morality as it pertains to a Black man who has not only been incarcerated for over 40 years, innocent, but now there is literally unquestionable evidence that must be looked at that can no longer be ignored. The judge's name, the Honorable Lucretia C. Clements. I'll repeat it again. Judge Lucretia C. Clements. That's L-U-C-R-E-T-I-A. Middle initial C, last name C-L-E-M-O-N-S. Philadelphia County Court of Common Pleas. Room 1220. And this is in Philadelphia. It is the Justice Center located at 13th and Filbert. Telephone number 215-683-7077. Again, 215-683-7077. Fax number 215-683-7079. Again, 215-683-7079. And unfortunately, I do not have email in front of me, but I will have that for you very shortly in time for Saturday's program. And again, we'll be sending this information out via email starting tomorrow. By Saturday, it will be out, distributed, and we're asking folks to make sure that they distribute it But again, we'll be recapping some of this on Saturday night's radio program.
Let me just check something. I thought I might have just gotten a text from Chairman Fred again. Let me just see. In the meantime, the other person that you are going to look to contact is Congressman Dwight Evans. Again, that's Congressman Dwight Evans. And, of course, that's, hold on 1 minute. Okay, I was looking for, okay, the, got several. Okay, his D.C. number is 202-225-4001. Again, 202-225-4001. That is his DC number. His Philadelphia number is 215-276-0340. Again, 215-276-0340. And his other Philadelphia number is 215-254-3400. Again, 215-254-3400. All right, so those are a few of the numbers that you want to start looking at calling. And again, we're going to put all of that on an email with the different city council people, as well as a couple of the senators with their telephone numbers, fax numbers, and email addresses. All right, so that, again, they can at least be put on notice that this is an issue that as a, not just as a black man or black woman, of course, that too, but a person of some morality, a person of some ethics, all right, that needs to be kind of focused on. This is an issue that deals with inhumaneness, and that's what we want them to take a look at so that they don't just say, well, it's not in your jurisdiction. All right, family, listen, we're going to close this session out. It doesn't seem like, I thought I saw someone that had a question or a comment, but we might have lost it. And Chairman Fred has not apparently resolved his issue yet. Let me just check to make sure. Okay. He hasn't called yet. I mean, he's not clear yet. So, all right, family, we're going to close this session out. And what do we have here? Okay, we're going to close this session out. And we will resume on Saturday. Again, we'll have the full list of who you can contact on Saturday. And again, we encourage folks to do so. We'll also be putting out a petition, and it'll be very brief. It'll just basically say, and again, focus on the morality of the situation now and the legality in the context of making sure that people know what where the citing is that Judge Wendell, or former Judge Wendell, made available to us and made us aware of. There is a law on the books. It's called the Braxton Law. And so we're going to be providing that information for you so that everyone knows exactly why we're now saying Mumia must be set free now. Not just because he's innocent, I mean, because of that, yeah, but also even by their law, he either should be set free or a new trial, one or the other. We must make sure that this judge adheres to what we know is, in fact, the law. Again, this is a tricky situation because she can actually rule neither one of those things and then say he has to go back to where he was, which is life without parole. She can rule that. She can say that. She can say she finds no just cause for whatever it is that's being said. She can do that. This is why it's so important that people at least let her know that we are watching, we're encouraging her to do the right thing. Okay. Hi, family. We're going to close the session out. Again, we will resume on Saturday at 10:30. For those who are involved now with our campaign to focus on the Million Women World March, we have one more meeting for Sunday, which is a general body meeting that I will be participating in. After this month, we start going into task force sessions. There'll still be general meetings, but I will more than likely not be the one who will be on those meetings. And it'll be general information as well as, you know, people that's coming in, getting acquainted with each other, different types of issues can be discussed. But the organizing will now go into effect starting March the 1st. The actual organizing on both the national and international levels will commence or begin officially on March the 1st. And so the various task forces, people who are really serious and ready to engage, they will get information on the various task forces and how they can get involved. But the Sunday sessions are going to be kind of regulated to general information. Those that are serious and ready to go, they will now move into a different area of mobility and of organizing. So if you want more information, you can just email us at nationalmwm@aol.com. Again, nationalmwm@aol.com or ambwrnow@gmail.com. And that's the acronym for A Million Black Women Rising Now at gmail.com. So again, it's ambwrnow@gmail.com or nationalmwm@aol.com. This again is $2 Tuesday, so you can of course make a $2 donation or more by using Cash App at $HOT1111. Again, $HOT1111. Or you can send it to our PayPal, which is nbhrproject@gmail.com. Again, nbhrproject@gmail.com. And we also now have a GoFundMe. And you can just go to GoFundMe and put in We Charge Genocide 21. And our new page for there will come up as well. All right, family, we're going to close the session out. Again, we thank everyone. I want to remind you, we must free Mumia Abu-Jamal, free all of our political prisoners, of course, but certainly we must free Mumia Abu-Jamal. And it has to be now. We can no longer wait. We've got to do it now. Lastly, there is an election coming up, and needless to say, we better be ready because a big game is getting ready to be played, and not just in our local communities, but on a national level. With that said,
I think we'd be fooling ourselves if we had an audience this large and didn't realize that there were some enemies present. This afternoon, we want to talk about the ballot or the bullet. The ballot or the bullet explains itself. But before we get into it, since this is the year of the ballot or the bullet, I would like to clarify some things that refer to me personally concerning my own personal position. I'm still a Muslim. That is, my religion is still Islam. My religion is still Islam. I still credit Mr. Muhammad for what I know and what I am. He's the one who opened my eyes. At present, I'm the minister of the newly founded Muslim Mosque Incorporated, which has its offices in the Teresa Hotel, right in the heart of Harlem. That's the Black Belt in New York City. And when we realize that Adam Clayton Powell is a Christian minister, he has Abyssinia Baptist Church, but at the same time, he's more famous for his political struggle. And Dr. King is a Christian minister in Atlanta, Georgia, but he's become more famous for being involved in the civil rights struggle. There's another in New York, Reverend Galamison. I don't know if you've heard of him out here. He's a Christian minister from Brooklyn, but has become famous for his fight against the segregated school system in Brooklyn. Reverend Cleve, right here, is a Christian minister here in Detroit. He's the head of the Freedom Now Party. All of these are Christian ministers. All of these are Christian ministers, but they don't come to us as Christian ministers. They come to us as fighters in some other category. I'm a Muslim minister. The same as they are Christian ministers, I'm a Muslim minister. And I don't believe in fighting today in any one front, but on all fronts. In fact, I'm a black nationalist freedom fighter. Islam is my religion, but I believe my religion is my personal business. It governs my personal life, my personal morals, and my religious philosophy is personal between me and the God in whom I believe, just as the religious philosophy of these others is between them and the God in whom they believe. And this is best this way. Were we to come out here discussing religion, we'd have too many differences from the outside, and we could never get together. So today, though Islam is my religious philosophy, my political, economic, and social philosophy is black nationalism. You and I... As I say, if we bring up religion, we'll have differences, we'll have arguments, we'll never be able to get together. But if we keep our religion at home, keep our religion in the closet, keep our religion between ourselves and our God, but when we come out here, we have a fight that's common to all of us against the enemy who is common to all of us.